The Cultural Council's mission is to nurture, promote, and support a healthy, diverse, and inclusive cultural sector so that the arts and culture are a part of everyday life for everyone. We invite listeners to discover Florida's cultural capital online at palmbeachesculture.com. Hey everybody, welcome to the Arty Girl Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah LaPierre, and I'm here with a very special guest today. We're going to dive into all things art and culture of Palm Beach County, as usual. But our guest is a writer, a historian, an educator, a founder, many things. The list goes on, but I'm grateful to have you here, Brian Knowles. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. I'm grateful to be here.
So, obviously, want to do a little bit of an introduction for you and let people know kind of the background and the story. How did you get started in education? Where did that spark first come from?
Oh, that's a complicated story. Part of that goes back to, you know, distant memories of being in high school or even being through K through 12 education and not really being the most engaged student growing up. And a lot of that came from a place of just not feeling affirmed in an educational environment, not seeing a lot of myself reflected in curriculum or learning about my history. And I definitely became dissatisfied around, I would say, middle and high school when I started actually getting books outside of school that taught me about who I really am. So because of that, I just kind of checked out of school. And actually, I didn't even want to go to college at one point, right? So eventually, as I started going through college, you know, just trying to find myself, one of the things that I did recall, and I remember even having this conversation with my parents, is that I felt that part of the conditions of the mental conditions of the people of my people was that we didn't see ourselves and we didn't get an opportunity to learn about who we are. So I wanted to be part of the solution. So eventually I got into education. Then when I got when I graduated college, I was a classroom teacher. So I was a teacher for about 10 years. Throughout those 10 years, I taught African-American studies.
That's amazing that you were able to keep that thread, that you saw the issue, focused on it, and were finding inspiration along the way through other sources. You know, you Absolutely. Had to really reach out beyond what was available to you.
I had to definitely go like take some different measures to be able to attain that information.
So the researcher part of your title started at a long
it
ways
started
back.
At a young age, absolutely.
Early. Yes. So what do you think, that's the motivation right there, but what else has you've established, I'm going to say it's a Power Builders,
yep.
That's curriculum. Yep. So what after you were in the classroom educating, what was it that led you to establish this?
Oh, so it was other things. So eventually I left the classroom and I went into upper administration within the school district, which I still do right now. I eventually secured a position as the manager of the Department of Office of African-American, Latino, Holocaust, and it was gender studies. In 2021, the state of Florida passed some legislation where we had to take the gender studies out of it. So eventually in that role, I was able to be exposed to just the workings and how things operated within just not our school district, because I got the opportunity through that position to work with school districts throughout the country and find out that the same thing that I contended with locally and the same things I experienced was just like a national, even international issue. Because I end up, collaborating with educators in Canada and England and Spain and other countries as well. And it seemed like a common story. So eventually what I did is I kind of conceptualized this business where we do curriculum development, we do seminars around culturally responsive teaching and education. And I eventually just put it into motion and start working with local organizations and other school districts throughout this country, because I've done trainings in Connecticut, California, and other places as well, working with educators. But, my exposure working at a systemic level saw that we had a bigger problem. And it's just what we think that we're experiencing right here in Palm Beach County, that this was a national, international issue of students being almost like a process of psychological violence to an extent. And what I mean by that is that when you don't see who you are and you don't, you know, see yourself represented in curriculum, and when you're mentioned in curriculum, you're mentioned in the most negative and downtrodden way. You know, like, for example, as African Americans, we're introduced to our history through slavery, which was a very real experience that we had, and the implications of slavery still definitely has deleterious impacts on us psychologically and socially, even economically, right? Because some of those disparities that exist today root back to slavery. So, you know, us not really understanding who we fully are, you know, understanding our history and culture, going back to Africa, and even the things that we were able to accomplish despite the circumstances here in the Americas. And because of that, I really wanted to normalize our stories within educational spaces. So yeah. I just kind of been moving forward with Power Real since Power
and,
Builders.
And positive then. Stories, right? And positive histories stories. That are incredibly impactful to the culture that, you know, Americans and globally people experience today.
Absolutely.
Arts, you know, music, all the things that come
exactly.
along with incredible lineage and history that, like you said, unfortunately are not maybe featured or highlighted no. as much as they deserve to be. So when people want to work with your company, is that something that starts from an individual school system? Are they finding you through the state? Are they how does somebody get connected with your business? And, you know,
most of the connections that I've made through Power Builders have been through clients and working with people and just word of mouth.
Yeah.
I do have a website. I do have, you know, a IG page, but I use kind of mix it with business and personal, of course.
Sure.
But most of the work and most of the people I meet just through just relationships that I've developed and work that I've done. And then I get references based off of that.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah. That's incredible. It's beautiful because like you said, it's a slow stripping away of identity that people like yourself have
Absolutely.
Experienced in school, that our generations, our younger kids still continue to experience, that they don't see themselves
Absolutely.
Portrayed in
a positive way.
In a positive way.
Exactly. Because our stories is just so like kind of just these narratives around our history is so awkward. Right. And what I mean by that is that, you know, just like I say, you know, we're introduced to our history and who we are through the most downtrodden state of who we are, who we were. And then when we even move forward and progress through our stories here in the Americas, you know, it's really told from these little awkward points that really don't exhibit the true agency and the true power who we really are. Just the ingenuity, innovation, the joy, the resilience, the perseverance and the strength, and just even the solidarity that we've achieved throughout history is just not represented well within curriculums in most K-12 spaces.
Yeah. So I know with all the work that you've been doing, you've received some wonderful recognition. You've been recognized as South Florida's top Black educator twice now.
Yes.
What does that recognition mean to you?
It's great to be recognized for the things you do, but I don't do it for that reason, right? And it means a lot to be just identified for making a positive impact. It has meaning, but as far as does it propel my work or does it dictate anything that I do, I can't say that it actually does. I'm honored to be, you know, recognized, and I've got various awards that I'm very proud of. But my work, I measure the success of my work based off of impact. So I enjoy it, but at the same time, it's not my driving force
or
what I do, the recognition.
Can you tell me about one of the proudest moments of your career?
I would say one of the proudest moments of my career is when I went into a classroom, and this was literally just like last year,
really?
Right? And it meant so much to me. When the kids walked away from the history lesson that I gave them, they literally expressed to their teacher, and the teacher came back and told me that they felt so proud of who they were. They felt like they can walk out of that classroom with their heads held high and no one else can tell them anything about who they are, right? So that right there meant so much because that's the purpose and that's the reason and the engine of why I do what I do, you know? And for a kid to feel just prideful of their history and their culture and their heritage meant everything to me.
Absolutely. And you never know what that's going to be able to spark, that
exactly.
energy. If it sparks, you know, who knows, a similar path into education such as yourself, or just another direction that they have a new sense of confidence in their story that they can put it out there and celebrate it without, you know, having to feel like they need to be quiet about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So talk about some community work. You've been, we were talking about this off camera a little bit already, but you've been a part of working with the Palm Beach Cultural Council.
Yes.
In developing the Palm Beach's Black Cultural Heritage Trail.
Yes.
It's a new landmark project. It's going to feature, I believe, 15 sites that are
the first phase,
like, visitable, you know, tourist friendly places. So can you tell us about how that project got started?
Well, the project had been in motion before I jumped onto the project, right? They had a young lady who was writing the project, doing conducting the research that went with it. But what eventually happened down the line of it is that they wanted someone from the African-American community to actually kind of take lead on the project. Someone who had roots in the community, because I'm fifth generation Palm Beach County.
Amazing.
So my family had actually, on both sides of my family, had migrated into what we know as Palm Beach County today in the 19th century. So, you know, based off of the work that I've done, based off of the work that I've done with this, the school district, they approached me and asked, what was I interested in collaborating? And of course, it was a no-brainer to be part of the project. So eventually I jumped in and started working closer with, you know, community members that I've had relationships with, elders from the communities that I've known, a lot of them because my family's so deep-rooted here. They know the family. They know who my grandmother was, my great-grandmother. Some of them even familiar with my great-great-grandmother, wow. Right, which kind of goes back that far. And just starting to get their local narratives and getting some of their voices included in it to make it more authentic, mm-hmm. right? Because a lot of the stuff that was taking place, it was great work mm-hmm. That had taken place in the research and what was written about the Black Heritage Trail was great, but it was solely based off of research, right. Looking at primary source and secondary source documents.
And now you're getting to really connect these dots and like bring it to the exactly. people who have been in the community and seen the development of these sites.
People who had experienced it already, yeah. you know, people that were just kind of near and dear to that work. You know, so I was able to bring and incorporate their voices in addition to some of the knowledge that I knew, because one thing that people don't recognize, and it's part of those things, it's part of African culture, right? That some of our history we don't write down. Right, a lot of our history is passed down orally. So a lot of the stories that weren't included or weren't found in newspapers or other documents were kind of stored mentally mm-hmm. from stories that I've heard from my elders, from my aunts, my uncles, my mother at one point, and even just listening to my dad right now. And some of these elders have stories that go beyond what any kind of history book contains. And they're more than happy to share these stories, right? You know, if I go to some of the elders and, you know, if I go to my dad's house right now and start asking him about his childhood, I can be there forever, right? And there's so many stories that are included within this that takes people's, you know, that incorporates people's voices and their authentic experiences in opposed to what was written.
Right, right. Yeah, it really attaches it, like you said, to Absolutely. The community.
Absolutely.
What do you hope is going to be an impact of this trail?
The biggest impact I would like to see that transpires from this trail is to reframe the narrative of our community to make it more inclusive. Throughout in American history, we hear narratives of what, you know, Europeans have done, you know, throughout just American history, and white people have done, which is great, right? We never want to take away from that. But our stories, our voices, our contributions, right, are usually marginalized from those stories. So when we talk about even within our local community, right, just how pivotal and critical of a role that we've had with shaping what we know as Palm Beach County today is so profound. And I think not just for the African-American community, but for all communities can appreciate the things that we've contributed to this community. For the African-American community can see themselves represented, you know, because that representation piece is not only relegated to children. Right. All of us want to see our contributions and hear our stories and how our voices and perspectives incorporated into narratives. Right. But also it helps others see the value that we've brought. Right. And see the humanity in us. And I think one of the reasons, one of the many reasons why bigotry exists is because we're uneducated. We're ignorant to what each other has contributed to our community. And when we see each other's stories and hear each other's stories, we humanize each other and we can authentically love each other.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where the, you know, the features, the highlights, focusing light yes. on those areas, on the communities that, like you said, have offered so much to so much. Our area and way beyond, that people just need to take some time and recognize
that. Take time to recognize it. I always say, you know, even on a larger level, there's no way to fully understand American history without including other stories and
the complexity of it.
It's
absolutely
so complex. And African Americans, specifically for this space, we've made such huge contributions to the development of this country and of this world itself. And when you kind of bring it down to a micro level of our community, we've played a huge part in the development of what we know as Palm Beach County, socially, economically, education-wise, just the culture of what we know as Palm Beach County. And the Americas itself has been hugely shaped by Africans and people of the African diaspora.
So are you able to tell us about any of the sites at all? I mean, you don't need to go into all 15. I don't think we have time for that on the podcast today. Yeah. People are going to have to explore on their own some, but maybe a highlight of one or two.
Oh, we have so many of them. I'm going to say a few of them would be, you got the Storm of 28 Memorial, which is off of Tamarind in West Palm Beach, which if people are not familiar with it, is that we had a storm in 1928 that came in and broke the dikes of Lake Okeechobee. The African-American victims of that storm, they just took all of those bodies and just put them in a mass burial ground in West Palm Beach in a present-day location. Even as I worked through that project and worked with the different people who were responsible for getting that site as far as something being preserved, and even other local historians and working with that, and there's so many stories that are constantly unfolding from what happened there. Even when you pass by that site, which there is historical markers there, and there is something physically that you can see, that there are bodies that actually transcend beyond the boundaries of that site.
Wow.
And as far as how many bodies that are underneath that, even underneath Tamarind Boulevard, is we don't even have an account for it. Mm-hmm. Right, because it's sacred ground, you can't dig it all up and so forth. But it's such a powerful story of just some of the ugly parts of our history, right? Sometimes we try to run and escape the things that have happened in our past because it's ugly and it's embarrassing, right? It's a blot on our history, but it's the actuality of our history. And I truly believe, unless we really start to dig in some of those ugly aspects of what, like even what the Storm of 28 Memorial represents, we can't truly rectify some of the racial dissonance that we have within our nation. Yeah. Honestly, we have to go back and face the ugly parts of
it. Yeah, you can't move on by ignoring
it. We can't move on by ignoring it. We can't pretend like it didn't happen, right? Because what happened still has effects today. So we must go to the root problem so we can actually find viable solutions moving forward. Another site that is very interesting is also Riverbend Park up in Jupiter. And a lot of people say, how is that part of the African-American or the Black Heritage Trail here in Palm Beach County? Some of the earliest permanent residents of what we know as Palm Beach County today were actually African-Americans who had fled slavery and kind of were amalgamated into the Seminole tribes here that were here in Florida, and they were known as Black Seminoles. The earliest recorded presence that we know was actually at one of the battles, which was at Riverbend Park of the Seminole Wars. So when we think the Seminole Wars, we think it was only a conflict between the federal government and Native Americans and indigenous people. But the Seminole Wars was also about, you had escape, you know, former enslaved people that came and absorbed within these Seminole tribes. And part of it was to bring Florida in as a slave state so you can actually recapture those formerly enslaved people. So even, for example, the Riverbend Park, where there was some of the battles from the Second Seminole Wars transpired, that actually the federal government, there's documents, they call it the Negro Wars, right? Because there were so many African-Americans that fought on the side of the Seminoles who fought to protect their freedom. Right. So even sometimes when I do lectures and seminars that connect to Riverbend Park, I ask people all the time, like, we live in South Florida. And why is there so many cities? We have three of them I can just name off the top of my head, Fort Pierce, Fort Lauderdale, Fort Myers, have a fort in front of them. Mm-hmm. Why are there military installations? Right. And those military installations connect back to the Seminole Wars, which was pretty much, if you start to reframe that narrative, was a slave insurrection. Right. So we have our local, our roots here are connected towards the emancipation of slavery. And you see a lot of that taking place right here in West Palm, in Palm Beach County, which a lot of people are not aware of. So you have a lot of sites, but the two that kind of stand out to me is just understanding Riverbend Park and also just the history and the context of the Storm of 28 Memorial.
Those dinner reservations and tea times will have to wait, because there's an art-filled paradise beyond these beaches. A mecca of masterpieces. Spectacular sights by day and night. A cultural capital that's calling your name. See so much more than you came for in the Palm Beaches.
So for today's Medical Minute, I'm here with Dr. Sonia Olson, a liver specialist for the TGH Digestive Health Center. We're going to talk about fatty liver disease. That sounds really bad, doc. So tell me more about it. What is it?
Fatty liver disease is not good. And unfortunately, there is an epidemic of fatty liver disease in this country. This is a disease where the liver inappropriately stores fat. Over time, that fat causes inflammation and even scar tissue and could cause cirrhosis.
How do you know you have it, doc?
Fatty liver disease most of the time does not cause symptoms until it's very advanced.
Should I go out and get a test right now?
Well, that's an excellent question. I don't think so, but okay. You can't tell if someone has fatty liver disease by looking at them. We do know that some patients are at higher risk, so any patient with type 2 diabetes should be screened, and any patient with metabolic syndrome, so two or more risk factors, such as obesity, hypertension, high cholesterol, or sleep apnea. These patients should also get screened.
How do you treat fatty liver disease?
Well, diet and exercise go a long way in both preventing and treating fatty liver disease, but now there is a medication available for certain patients with fatty liver disease, making the conversation with your doctor even more important.
Awesome, doc. Well, that's some great information. Thank you so much. And that was your Medical Minute here with Dr. Olson. Thanks so much for coming out.
That's incredible history, and which I didn't know of. I've heard about the battlegrounds at Riverbend. I visited there a little bit.
Yes,
I've seen some of the places and a little bit of the history that they have there. But wow, to expand that knowledge puts definitely a whole different frame on it. For sure.
It's just like I say, it's this thing I say, sometimes to learn, we have to unlearn. Right? And what I mean by that is everything that we've been taught is almost like indoctrination to an extent, right? It's almost like a mental conditioning. And what unfortunately happens within that mental conditioning is that you marginalize human beings from certain stories. And when you marginalize human beings, you can also justify the perpetual oppression of those people, right? Because you don't see the value that they've added to anything, right? So this allows us to redefine just not our local history, but just who we are and our identity as Americans and as even residents of Palm Beach County.
Yeah. Is there a way that this, obviously we're talking about, major gaps in knowledge of our history, all of our combined histories here. How do you hope that, this trail, the Heritage Trail, helps people get curious about that, in offering new ways for them to engage with history?
Because some of these stories are so outside of what people know, right? It's going to inevitably create just what we know, what I want to call it, rabbit hole.
Okay.
Right? It's going to send people down a rabbit hole, right? Because if I've been lied to about this, even on a local level, it should naturally spark curiosity of what else am I missing?
Sure.
Right? Even on a national, international level, right? Going back to ancient history and going back to even modern U.S. history, right? How much am I missing? Right? How much as us as Americans, not African Americans, not white Americans, but as American people, have we missed out on it? How much we've been it's just a disservice.
Denied.
Right? We've been denied it. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a great way to frame it. Just we've been denied the truth. And what that truth holds is just that we've all made contributions and we all share the same human experience and we all have a shared identity. Right. We think that we have like these very different identities. But when we start looking back in our history and what we are culturally as a people and as American people, right, we find out that we've all created just something new in America based off of these experiences that we've had in our communities. Right. When we think about music, when we think about film and television and what the thing is that we enjoy, our culinary experiences and so forth. Right. When you find out that, Africans have made huge contributions to all of those areas plus more, right? We feel like we've been denied something. And we feel like we've all been lied to and we've all been pitted against each other to some extent.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you talked about, you know, the music and education. I know there's parts of curriculums that you've written around, like hip hop relating to literature, yes, and different music and arts. How is that something that you get inspiration from and then try and, you know, put that to your students or the people who are using your curriculum to educate?
Absolutely. So art tells so many stories. And, you know, as we're here, I know that's like your major focus in looking at art and visual arts and music and so forth. It tells so many stories. And one of the things that people must realize when it comes, especially around music, that at one point in this country, African-Americans had no voice to challenge anything that we were going through. Right. So but we always found ways to resist oppression and racism in this country. Right. And that's part of our story. Right. That is usually not told because we're usually framed, especially if you predicate what you've learned in curriculum and you watched in Hollywood, that we've acquiesced to oppression. We've always resisted it. And one of the many ways that we've resisted it is through our music and through our art, right? Even if it was quilt building, if it was the blues, if it's jazz, and even if it's hip hop at some point, you get to hear and see our experiences kind of express through that.
Absolutely. Right? All storytelling in a way that maybe was safer or that could be expressed and shared in a community without.
Exactly. And it's an authentic voice.
Right.
Right. Yeah. There's no one there to sanitize what I'm saying or censor what I'm saying because I can truly express myself through music. Right. So we also find that working with students, because we have an ever-changing world, especially these younger generations. And I always say one of the biggest things, gaps of dissonance that we have in education is not racial dissonance or cultural dissonance, it's age dissonance, Tom, right? Every generation changes, and as the world changes. But one of the things that never changes is just the way to engage people through music and art, right? And our students are always engaged because it's so non-traditional, and it allows students to move and to speak and to engage in curriculum in a different way that's just so much more expressive, right?
It's energetic. You're actually moving energy through your body as opposed to just trying to be still and absorb.
Yeah, just sitting there and be still, absorb, sit down, be quiet, spoke when spoken to.
Yeah.
That format does not work for some kids, right? Some it does, some it doesn't. And music transcends those boundaries because everyone loves art in some form of music and something like that. That's like universal. It's a universal language. So it allows us to tell stories in a rigorous way because, like, for example, you mentioned the hip-hop course, and one of the courses I did develop for the state of Florida is an elective course on exploring hip-hop as literature, right? In hip-hop, when you talk about rigor and you take rap lyrics, you take a Kendrick Lamar, a J. Cole, or even go old school with a Big Daddy Kane or a De La Soul, and you take those lyrics and start to analyze and dissect, there's so many stories. And when you're trying to teach students literary devices, right, compare and contrast, critical thinking skills and so forth, what better to do than using hip-hop lyrics, which is literally poetry, but it's storytelling, right? And it's done to a rhythm, and it's authentic, and it's such an art form, right?
Absolutely.
It's beyond just a music, it's a culture, and it's such an art form that appeals to all of us. Right. Because when you go to concerts and hip hop concerts, if you go to a J. Cole concert, for example, that's going to be white and black people in the audience together. Right. That are singing the songs and the lyrics together and so forth that know it and have the same engagement. And it's such a universal language to be able to speak to just not our people, but to all students in the classroom.
Definitely. And if somebody already has a love or a passion for a specific artist or music, you're giving them a new lens in which to look at this and
Absolutely.
Appreciate it even deeper, as opposed to trying to make somebody, I don't know, read Shakespeare and not
Exactly.
be attached to it because it has nothing to do immediately with their identity or what they're interested in.
Exactly. I know I collaborated with a few professors at FAU a couple years because the pandemic just kind of time is
I say a couple of days. It might be a month ago. There's no way to know.
Exactly. So I'm going to say right before the pandemic, we did research in one of our local middle schools working with students who were so-called struggling readers. Right. And a lot of them weren't engaged. And that's value in Shakespeare. That's value in Edgar Allan Poe.
Absolutely.
All of that stuff. Right. But again, those experiences, those are languages that the kids are not connecting with, right? So a lot of the skills and so forth that they wanted to kind of cultivate or they thought the kids didn't have, right? We went in literally and replaced the Shakespeare and all of that stuff with Kodak Black and with the Baby and Lil Baby and all of that, the stuff that they enjoyed. And literally all of those things, when it came to a metaphor, simile, those kids knew what they were. They knew what it was, right? Because like the light bulb just went off because it was something that they knew already, and it was something they were familiar with.
Yeah.
Yes.
What, speaking about, you know, inspirations in music and arts, what are some of the inspirations that drive you in your work?
Oh, man. I would say definitely music. Actually, at one point, I wanted to be a rapper. That didn't kind of pan out the way I thought it was going to be. I was joking with my boy last night, and I said, this adult stuff is not fun right now. I said, the way I envisioned this, I was supposed to be on my third platinum album at this point. That didn't happen. But I would say definitely through hip-hop. Hip-hop is a huge inspiration for me. I would say my kids, students, right? I would say the biggest inspiration that I have of when I can look into the eyes of kids and I can see the engagement and just see them coming to life based off of just the things that we're talking about in the classroom and just seeing their stories represented definitely propelled me. And I would say my inspiration also, most importantly, comes from my family.
Yeah. Yeah, you said you have a daughter who's artistic and she gets into painting and drawing and
she does it all day. Yes. Yeah.
Whether you're not, like you said earlier, you're not sure where that comes
she
from.
She didn't get it from me. Not maybe from a mother, but not me. Definitely not me.
But I mean, there's clearly massive amounts of creativity in the family.
It's there.
Yeah.
But as far as the manifestation of it,
yeah,
it's a little different.
Shows up in different ways.
There you go.
That's all right.
That's a good way to put it. That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
So how do you see the arts specifically in Palm Beach County relating to equity and I guess the representation that we have here and how that's progressing, hopefully?
I honestly don't see the connection in public education right now, right? And I think we need more of it and we need to incorporate it more within a classroom. But at the present day of state, we do have art programs and we do have schools like Bach and Dreyfus that are dedicated solely to the arts. But I don't feel like we have enough. Right. Art and the ways to convey lessons, you know, when it comes to like ELA reading and mathematics and so forth and using that because we've seen proof and we have documented evidence and research that says it works and it does impel student achievement. But I don't see it enough within a traditional classroom setting right now. I would like to see it and I would like to see us expand these programs. And hopefully, and I'm optimistic that maybe we do catch on, right? And that's part of the reason why I created two courses actually related to art that are elective courses in the state of Florida. Exploring Hip Hop as Literature is one of them. And another one is African-American History Through Music and Visual Arts is another elective course that I developed that is available statewide. So hoping that we do have an infrastructure in place that we can start offering and expanding that is something that I'm hopeful about. But as of right now, the connection is not fully there the way it should be.
Yeah. Now, forgive me for not knowing this, but how do you have a curriculum? It's available statewide. Yes. How does that get picked up and actually input into schools and used?
Absolutely. It's easy. What it does, each individual school, and for those elective courses, so those are going to be just stuck at the secondary level, which would be middle and high school. So each of those schools, if that school leader sees the value in it, they add it to a course selection sheet. They do a master board first and see what courses they want to offer going into the next school year. Then they do a course selection sheet and the students go out and they select their elective courses. I've worked with schools around like every year around this time of year, actually, when I get back into the office in December, I'm going to send out an email to all the principals. These are course offerings for African-American studies, Latin American studies, Jewish and Holocaust studies that we can offer. Then I start working with student organizations, like, for example, to entice the students to take African-American history. I usually work with Black student unions that are on campus and have the peers recruit each other to be in those classes. Yeah. It's much more effective than an adult telling them to take a class.
Of course, if they're interested, maybe their friend will be interested. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So. Okay, interesting. Yeah, yeah, I didn't know how that system works.
It's a simple process. As long as it's a course that's listed in what we know as our state course code directory, you can offer it at a school.
All right, another question. Do you have your own personal creative practice?
Not as much as I need to. Right. I do like to write poetry. I tell you, I love hip hop. I love rap. Mm-hmm. And there has been moments when I take and I write rap music sometime and I've worked with friends and recording stuff. And I've even worked with students on projects. Right. Because I've gone to schools and kids are doing hip hop projects. And, you know, they say, Mr. Knowles, can you rap? And I'm just like, yeah, I can. I can try. You know, then I jump on a song with them. That has been, you know, one of my only creative outlets right now because I work so much. Mm. But I'm hoping to expand that and hoping to get into some gardening again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I definitely need to get back into my hobbies. My daughter just asked me that. She said, Dad, what do you do besides work?
Sure.
Right? And I said, you know, a good question. Right? I just do a lot of work and I home, I'm sleeping, spend time with my family. Yeah. But when it comes to like my hobbies and, you know, really just doing some creative work outside of building curriculum, of course, right, which right. I do find is an art form. It is an art form.
Absolutely.
But something outside of that is not connected. I need to start.
Yeah, something for yourself.
I need to get back into that.
Right. Gardening sounds like a great one, too. I love gardening.
I love it. I just got a home with a yard. So now, and I have
like space. You got some sunshine now where you can actually.
Exactly. Yeah. I got some trees that I got in pots that I need to put in the ground. So. Yeah.
What kind of trees you grow?
They're two mango trees.
Ooh, nice. Exactly. Nice. Season comes around, have your own mangoes.
Exactly.
That's the best thing. And then you get to a point where you can just share with the neighbors and you have more than you're ever going to use. So you can kind of.
And I know it's organic because I grew it.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. That's right. You don't have to go to Whole Foods.
Absolutely. Yes.
What do you see as the biggest challenge in creating culturally affirming spaces in education?
I would say the biggest challenge that we face right now is two things. All right. One of the things that I see in public education is that we have a serious adult problem. Right. And I find sometimes with some educators, not all of our educators, we have some fantastic educators right in our classroom. We have some that need some support, I'm going to say. But just the willingness to expand their knowledge base sometime. Right. And sometimes I say my number one dream in education is to build capacity with educators to teach, not technology necessarily. Mm. Sometimes people, we need more technology in the classroom. Our kids have enough technology, right? But we really need our teachers to really reframe the way they view things, right? But we have a lack of that. And we have a lack of educators who are willing to really expand, to grow and change practice. Most importantly, not even educators in the classroom, but educational leaders that are not willing to step outside of just the orthodox script of what education looks like. Instead of reimagining what it looks like, we keep pushing the same thing forward and getting the same results. Yeah. And those results are not good.
Yeah. Right?
And those results
that nobody's happy with.
Nobody's happy with it, right? Yeah. We're not really producing critical thinkers. We're not producing students who have a diverse mindset and that are really just ready for the real world in some cases, right? We have a lot of students that know how to take tests real well, right? But when it comes to, you know, taking knowledge then and applying it to everyday life and being a better human being, right? We need more of that. The second challenge that I would say is just some of the state legislation that has taken place throughout this country. Florida is not alone with that. Mm-hmm. When it comes to taking out curriculums, African-American history, indigenous people, Latin American study, Holocaust studies in some of these states, that's a huge barrier, right? Because we're removing chunks of our history, right? And we're trying to tell history without centering diverse perspectives that created our country and the ugly parts of our country, the good parts of our country, right? And really just kind of dispelling this myth. If I tell the ugly aspects of this country, I am trying to indoctrinate students to be unpatriotic is nonsense, right? Because I'm an American who's very proud to be an American, right? Am I happy with everything that has transpired through American history? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I even kind of go back to what James Baldwin said at one point. He said, I love my country so much that I can be critical of her. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm going to hold on to that sentiment that I can criticize my country because I love it. And I want my country to stand firm on the foundational principles that are written in the Constitution, the foundational principles that are written in the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal, right? We need to get to that point, right? And the way that we get to that point is really pulling out all of those stories that took place in the past, if they're good or ugly,
right?
Right. Some of those stories may not benefit a certain narrative, right? But that's okay. Yeah. Right. Because it's time to reframe our narratives at this point so we can move forward as a country and really get away from this divisiveness that's being created by taking away those stories, right? The more we sanitize our curriculum, is the more divided we become.
Yeah, to be able to, for everyone to benefit from the strength that comes along with when you can sit in discomfort.
That part.
And work through it.
Get through the cognitive dissonance of it, right? So you can cognitively reframe things so we can really move forward.
Yeah.
Yes.
So just a couple questions. before we wrap up.
I'm down.
I always ask people if there's one spot that you're going to tell somebody who's visiting or who's lived here for a while, you need to visit this arts cultural site. It could be, you know, a museum, a piece of public artwork, a place where they can go hear music, an event that happens annually. What's one that you
I would say one of the couple places on a heritage trail.
Okay.
Mosaic Park.
Yeah.
Which is in West Palm Beach, right? Beautiful, artistic, and it also has murals and small stations that give stories of some of the African Americans who were contributors not to just only West Palm Beach history, but Palm Beach County history, and also the Sunset Lounge, which stands there today. It was like right in front of the park. And the Sunset Lounge, we know, was known as the Cotton Club of the South at one point, right? So I would say, and I'm going to really push this heritage trail, go see Mosaic Park and go to Sunset Lounge in West Palm Beach.
Excellent. Where can people find more about the Heritage Trail? If they want to look it up, see all the sites, is there a map somewhere online that they could get connected with?
The Cultural Council is going to roll out a portal online where people can get that. They're also going to create physical brochures that are going to be distributed throughout Palm Beach County. Amazing. And from the last time I spoke with them, they're going to distribute these brochures like in hotels and different places.
Okay, fantastic.
Or tourists can also take advantage of, you know, visiting some of these sites.
Excellent. Right? Yeah, we want everybody to know about it.
Absolutely.
That comes through. Okay, great. And then how about some advice, maybe a little future vision? If somebody is listening and they're looking into getting into education, they're looking to make changes in state policy, national policy when it comes to education, what kind of advice would you want to leave for them?
I give one bit of advice to anybody who wants to create change, especially national systemic change. Systems and institutions to change and transform, it's a beast to change, right? It's an arduous task, and it's something that can't be done alone. It's something that can't be done overnight collectively, mm-hmm. right? As I always tell people, make change within your household, within your family, and within your local community, right? So even if you want to make change within education, find out what school is zoned near you, right? Mm-hmm. Jump on that SAC committee, right? Because SAC committees, school advisory committees, actually welcome community members to sit on that committee. So they can help those school leaders make decisions for those schools, right? Start small. Yeah. And I believe, and I heard a professor from University of North Carolina say years ago, right, when we want to change systems, it's a beast. So you start fires in different parts of the room, and eventually the whole room will catch fire.
Yeah. Powerful. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Well, if there's a way for people to connect with you, now's the time to share that. So if you have, you know, social media where you like to connect with people, if people want to find out more about your business and the work that you do, if you have a website.
Yeah, absolutely. My website is Teach Hill Bill. All right. So it's going to be Teach, the word Teach, Hill, H-E-A-L, Bill, B-U-I-L-D, .com. So Teach Hill Bill is my website. My email address is powerbuilders@teachhillbill.com. And also I have an IG page. And again, my IG page is like kind of hybrid of work and also family and personal stuff.
Sure.
And that's going to be Teach Hill Bill as well.
Okay. So. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here, for sharing the stories, for sharing about the Heritage Trail, all these things that, you know, are great to hear. I know our audience is going to be excited to get into them and learn more about them. So we really appreciate your time.
No, I appreciate you having me here and to be able to just express this and just really let the community know about the work that is being done here in Palm Beach County to really promote and preserve African-American history and culture. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you again to the audience for listening in. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Huge thank you, as always, to the Cultural Council for being our sponsor. You're amazing and wonderful, and we appreciate your support. And I'll see you next time on the Artie Girl Podcast.